Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Phileas Club. This is a show where we cover the news from around the world. We literally go in a world-spanning internet call and go from the west coast of the United States sometimes. We go to Africa. We go to Europe. Today, we don't have someone from Asia, but I think it would have killed us to try to find a time gathering all of those people with someone in Asia. So we cover, let's say, half the world. My name is Patrick Beja. Maybe not half. That's going to be offensive to someone. We cover parts of the world. My name is Patrick Beja. I live in Finland. I am originally from France. And I am incredibly excited to welcome these three wonderful people. Let's start with someone you probably know about because you've heard him on the show before, Tom Merritt. You woke up early. You've seen The Mandalorian. Everything is good with the world. Correct?
Yeah. Well, two out of three ain't bad, Patrick.
Okay.
Yeah. And the first two certainly helped further our goal of getting to the third. But thanks for having me back. It's good to be here.
Very happy to have you on, as always. The second person is Paula from Kenya, who's coming back after a show a few months ago, which focused on Kenya specifically. That was episode 154, if you want to go listen to it. But hey, Paula, how's it going?
Hello, Patrick. I'm happy to be back and speaking with you.
I'm very excited to talk about, you know, what's been happening in Kenya and what's been making the news, not just about life in the country, but the actual headlines. So I'm curious to hear what's happening.
Yeah.
And the last person on the show, but certainly not the least, is someone that you might have heard on the show before, Alessandro Tomaello. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly. I try to always.
It's,
you know,
perfect. It's perfect.
Ah, thank you very much. We were reminiscing before we started recording about the last time you were on the show, which was episode 144. And we specifically talked about the pandemic in South Korea, Italy, France, Finland, and the US. So basically a tour of how it was back a million years ago in March of 2020.
Definitely feels like a million years ago, yes.
Doesn't it? It's funny, we were all laughing because I was talking about you introduced us to the concept, you and Giovanni, you introduced us to the idea that you would need to fill a form to go out and to have some kind of step before you would go out to make sure that you really needed to. And we were like, oh, that's so interesting. The idea that you would need to fill a form to get people to think about. Now, I think every country's had it.
And, you know, yes, probably.
And you're like, oh, you need to social distance. And what is social distancing? I don't know if it's funny or sad or both at the same time that it feels like.
Is there a word that combines both?
I think 2020 is that
it
word.
Is 2020, yes.
Although maybe it's a little bit more sad than funny. I mean, I don't know. It's certainly sad. I'm not trying to say that 2020 isn't sad. It's a pandemic, and there are, you know, many people who died. But at the same time, it's not like a world war. It's looking like we might have a serious vaccine fairly soon. I've been saying on the show over the past few weeks that I think we're seeing a path away from the gloom in 2021. Is that something, maybe I'm going to turn to Paula and maybe she's going to say, oh no, we were fine. All 2021 was great. But do you think it's fair to say, no, maybe not. Do you think it's fair to say that it's looking up next year or am I, you know, delusional?
Well, let me just first say that March 2020, the virus had not hit Kenya just yet. So I have fonder memories of March 2020. Sorry, Alessandro. And so for 2021, you know, it's been very interesting watching sort of the global news about the vaccine and who's getting the vaccine and where they're getting their vaccine. And I don't think the vaccine is coming to Kenya anytime soon. There's been no discussion of it from our government. And so I think people are just sort of prepared to be doing this lifestyle for some time and interested in sort of how sort of the wealthier countries in the world are able to take on the vaccines, and hopefully they can be our guinea pigs in seeing how this works. But generally, I think the idea is, as long as we get to escape 2020, I think most people are looking forward to 2021 in that way.
I think it's fair to say as long as we get to escape, because we're not out yet. There are like 3 weeks left and who knows what's going to happen. But so let me dig a little bit deeper in this. What's the situation currently? Like, how badly are you hit with the pandemic, first of all?
Yeah, so we've had about 90,000 cases in Kenya, with a majority of them, like 71,000 of them, being recovered and just about 1,500 deaths. So it's very low compared to, say, what's happening in many places around the world. But also there's sort of been a sense of, early on, we locked down and we shut down, and we Nairobi, which is the capital, was locked down. So no one could travel in or out of the capital unless, you know, they had a special pass or permission. And now, especially since it's December, which is our summertime, this is really our big season where a lot of the diaspora comes back and so forth. It kind of feels like COVID is this thing that we know is there, but we're not taking too seriously. I mean, we're wearing masks and sort of social distancing, but, you know, people are going out and doing things that they shouldn't at this particular point in time, which is interesting. And we have a curfew that starts at 10 p.m. and a lot of people have been violating that curfew of late. So how do you combine our holiday season, which is very festive and it's summer, with sort of this expectation of remaining diligent? Mm. And I think most people are tired of that.
You know, it's funny. I think every country, what I've, you know, gleaned from the conversations we've had throughout the year, every country, every person thinks that their country is doing badly and that their compatriots, the citizens of this country are terrible. And probably they don't really think about it in those terms, but it seems instinctively they think they're worse than people in other country. And every person I talk to tells me, oh, but you know, we're doing this and we're not respecting that, and people are going out. And it seems like it's the same everywhere. It's really interesting.
Yeah. If, you know, the whole world is your competition, if I can use that phrase. So there's always someone doing better and there's always someone doing worse than you, to be honest. But what I will say is, here in Kenya this week, our nurses went on strike. A lot of like our healthcare workers have gone on strike because of lack of pay and lack of sort of PPEs and protections, especially after one particular doctor passed away earlier this week from COVID. And, you know, he hadn't been paid in 5 months. So there's a lot of drama and politicking around that. And so I think a lot of it is not, it's, you know, COVID has been generally kind to our country. Also, we are not necessarily counting cases as one should. And so also our numbers are skewed, I believe. A lot of people are not going to hospitals. There are a lot of deaths that are happening at home. So we're not really sure what's happening. And so, but in general, I think people are, depending on how your government responded and how you, and the potential in how well one thinks they could respond. I think that's what most people are thinking about when they complain about whether or not their country is doing well or not. Yeah. At least that's the case here in Kenya.
It might have, yeah, certainly something to do with this. I think in Finland, we're doing well because of population density, and then people in Finland are already social distancing anyway, even without the pandemic. I must have, I probably told that joke before, but there's a joke that's been going around that says the government has lifted the mandated 2 meters between people, and Finns are celebrating because they can go back to their usual 5 meters between people. So that's kind of I'd like to ask a little bit more about the vaccine still, Paola, because obviously for everyone else on the panel, I think everyone started, as you mentioned, saying, okay, so when are we getting it? Is it, you know, end of December, early January? How are we going to administrate it? And who is going to get it first, et cetera, et cetera. We're sort of getting the machine rolling, and maybe we're a little bit more impacted, and it's winter, and that is, you know, takes a heavier toll. But at the same time, as you said, you're not counting everyone you should, maybe as we were a few months ago. Is there a feeling that, I'm going to ask it a little bit bluntly, is there a feeling that, you know, oh, there you go, the rich countries are grabbing all the vaccines for themselves first, and we'll probably get it later if we can. Like, is there some kind of resentment, or at least, yeah, how are you looking at this?
Yeah, and I think even before the vaccine, the idea of even a vaccine way, 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 way in the past, like, and by past, I mean April, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah, so long ago.
I think there was always a sense of, I think there are certain countries in this world that know that they are just at the bottom of the totem pole at the end of the day. It's so sad to say that. And so we expect to not be, especially when it's the whole world that's needing this one thing. We don't expect to be sort of considered, everyone's fighting for themselves at this point in time. And so is our country the type of country that has the resources and the connections to come up near the top? And that's unlikely in this case, right? Yeah. And so I think there's, you know, we're part of the AstraZeneca vaccine that's out of Oxford. We're part of the global couple of global, I think 26 countries that are being tested for it. You know, even the idea of the Pfizer vaccine is strange here because you need extreme cold, I think. It needs to be sort of kept in really cold temperatures, which we don't have the facilities to hold here either. So I think there's just a sense of everyone else gets to have, and I don't think it's resentment. I think it's just general acceptance of our place in the world and hoping that, you know, we're able to maintain until things get to our level. Yeah. There's also a general, and I think this happens with a lot of Black populations around the world, a general suspicion around vaccines and such and testings and so forth, whether it's from like the Tuskegee syphilis case in the U.S. or I think a couple of months ago, there was some French doctors who got in trouble by saying the vaccine should be tested in Africa first, things like that. And so I also think there's a little bit of, let's see what everyone else has to go through before we go through this test, because I don't think people generally trust what might be coming our way either. So there's a level of that in there.
You mean the vaccine in general, or like that things might be done differently for Africa and Kenya?
Yeah, exactly. So if, you know, if there was levels of good vaccine, we would get the worst type of vaccine, maybe because it's cheaper, maybe because, I don't know. It just in general, when it comes to sort of medicine, vaccines, testing, there's a general suspicion of what could happen to us and getting sort of not the best, really,
as an
option. And so there's also, so what I mean by that is then there's a relief in saying, hey, is this going to work on that side of the world before it arrives here? But also if you consider the countries that will probably get it before we do, so for example, the US, or, you know, even just Europe and just those numbers and how long those would take. I just can't imagine first quarter or second quarter 2021 working in our favor.
Right, of course, yeah. All right. So let's go to, and I wasn't intending on talking about the pandemic only, but I guess, you know, that's the main concern. We'll have an opportunity a little bit later to talk about other things if there are, you know, if they're at the forefront as well. But let's go to maybe Alessandro for a second, since in Europe, I was going to say it all started with you. That's absolutely not accurate. But for us, it became real, I guess. And when I say us, I mean Europe. Maybe even the US thought it wasn't really real when things went haywire. I was going to use another term in Italy. So it started with you. How is the situation now? Are you looking at the vaccine as the immediate time frame solution? How's it going in Italy?
So currently Italy is going through the second wave. I think we're on the second part of the second wave for everything that's regarding the pandemic. And it's really interesting listening to Paula, because she was talking about the that perception of the population, like you are taking a break from COVID and stuff like that. And
that's our summer in Europe, right? That's how it went.
Yes. Like in our summer months, from June to August, I would say, the restriction levels went down. The transmission of the virus was still down. So everyone was like still keeping their masks on and everything. But there was a general sense that maybe we were through it. Maybe the second wave wasn't coming. And it really just started happening when the climate got cold again. Schools, people were going in schools again. And so starting with probably September, October, the second wave started to came up, and it was way, way worse than the first wave. Just because I think we thought we were prepared. And so we thought that we were able to shut down everything very quickly if we needed to. But still, we tried to also trying to keep schools open, keep the economy going, trying to have a more, how should I say this, a more open idea against the vaccine. Yeah. Like when we got hit at the end of February and start of March, nobody had masks, nobody had alcoholic frictions to disinfect your hands if you maybe wanted to go have an haircut. And I think what happened in this second wave, it was that we all thought, yeah, maybe we can try and be much more careful. Mm. And now we are prepared. We know what we are going to go through. But it just happened that this wave hit us much harder than the first time.
And it's not just because
talking about numbers.
Yeah, no, it's not just because you counted better. You know, there was more testing, which meant, yes, you know, more numbers. Because certainly in France, that was the case. I don't know. I mean, in France, I think everyone stopped wearing masks in summer. It was like complete, like, woohoo, relaxed, we're good. But the second wave, at some point, there were some people thinking, oh, it's not going to happen, we're going to be fine. And there was this general, now we were prepared, as you were saying, so we can handle it. And certainly it wasn't the case. But there was also, I'm not trying to diminish the importance of the second wave. It was probably bigger than the first one, maybe, I don't know. But the number of testing was so much higher that obviously the number of cases skyrocketed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm pretty sure I should check this before saying it, but I think that one of the variables that you can check regarding this should be the percentage of actual positive cases compared to the total cases that are tested. And I think that in the second wave, that percentage is still higher than the first wave.
Okay.
So it should be proportionally still bigger. I would have to check that. So
okay.
I'm not saying this is the absolute truth. I would have to check this.
Yeah, but it certainly seems to feel that way.
It still feels bigger. It still feels like, oh man, we knew this was a possibility, and it still happened, even if we try to be to listen to the rules, to just go by the law and common sense.
Do you think people did listen to the rules? Because in France, again, I'm comparing everything to France, but in France, people did not. And it was just, you know, like, maybe that's unfair. We heard a lot about the people who didn't. And maybe there were a lot of people who did. And of course, you don't hear about the people who do, who follow the rules. But do you think in Italy, people followed the rules?
I think in the first wave, basically everyone followed the rules. It was a really scary situation. We were the first country in the West to go through this, so it was a completely alien situation for most of us. And just, I think, just out of fear, people were much more happy to listen to the rules and follow the rules. I think now people are still following the rules, but I think it's a little. People are more relaxed and not that scared, because they have already went through this once. So I think maybe there's not the same level of people following the rules. And yes, of course, if you just go turn on a TV and listen to news, it feels like no one is wearing masks. But people very much do still follow the rules, in my opinion. It's maybe less than the first time, just because the situation where you were scared at during March, during April, is a little lower, I think. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but yeah, I think Italians still pretty much try to follow rules.
All right. And so the question about vaccines, I guess everyone's looking at vaccines as the solution, I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah. And we're all expecting them soonish.
We are expecting them soonish. But the thing is, even if we start vaccinating in January, February, or whenever that is, it would take a lot of manpower to vaccinate an entire population. It will take time, and it's not something that we can say, oh yeah, we start vaccinating people in January and probably by February we will be done. Probably going to take the better part of 2021, if not more, probably.
Yeah, I think that's
even then.
No, I was going to say, I think that that's something that we understand in France and Finland as well. There's the hope is that we can start in 2021 vaccinating the essential personnel, essentially. So healthcare workers and people who are especially at risk. And then slowly in 2021, other people will start to get vaccinated. And maybe towards the summer or the end of the year, we can go back to normal. Although the question of how long you stay immune is still up in the air. So that's also a fun thing to think about.
Yeah, we still don't know much about that. I think I've read some papers on this, and I think there are some positive results in that department, but I guess we'll see. Guess we'll see how long a person could stay immune to COVID after getting that vaccine. It's totally possible that the COVID vaccine could become like the flu vaccine.
You have to get it every year.
That possibility, we don't know. We don't know yet. We will see and we will act after we get to know what happens. What's the situation in there?
Yeah, so I guess it's roughly equivalent. I wonder, Tom, and please anyone feel free to jump in at any point, but Tom, how are things going in the US, I guess relating to COVID, but we can talk about other things afterwards, but in that department.
Yeah, I mean, that is the big story right now, especially in Los Angeles, where I'm at. And that's what I feel most comfortable talking about. I think it's a mistake to treat the United States as a thing. It's so big and wide and varying. So California and Los Angeles are not doing well on paper right now. I also try to pay attention to what I actually see around me to balance out what I read. Not that what I read is wrong. It's just that if I only go by what I read, I'd probably be panicking a lot more than I am. But we had 12,000 infections in Los Angeles reported yesterday. ICU capacity is down to less than 5%. Oh, Orange wow. County just canceled elective surgeries. So that the is surge scary. Here is very serious. Yeah. The reason that I say I try to balance that out is, you know, when I go take my dogs out for a walk in my neighborhood, I see all the same people I normally see. They're all wearing masks. We always check in with each other. How are you doing? Do you need anything? Everybody seems to be doing well. So I do hear, and I started to hear this mid to late November, the sirens a lot more. I mean, it's a city, you hear sirens regularly, but you can tell when it's like, there's a lot more. And I remember hearing that in April when this first started, and it feels like we're back to people being rushed to the hospital more often. But other than that, in my daily life, everybody seems to be okay in my area, but the statistics and I know in the wider region are very bad. We just reinstated a lockdown. It's very complex. The government has done a horrible job of communicating it because there's a state lockdown and then there's a county lockdown and then there's a city lockdown. But the upshot is you can't go to a barber. You can't dine at a restaurant anymore. You could only dine outside before anyway. And so we've locked down. It's not quite as harsh of a lockdown as it was in April, because we know more about how it's actually transmitted. So there's certain things that they're able to allow happen on retail side safely. But yeah, it's not good right now in Los Angeles.
It's interesting because, I mean, I don't know about Kenya, but certainly the feeling in France and in Finland, and you guys can tell me if that feels similar, is we're kind of holding steady. France implemented a number of restrictions a couple of months ago, and I think back then we were at like 60,000 new cases. Was it a day? It seems crazy that would be the case. But now we're down to 10, and the government was hoping to get down to 5,000, and we didn't quite reach that, but it's certainly not as bad as it was a few months ago. And even though, you know, when you listen to the internet, you feel like everything is no one is listening, and as Sandra was saying, it in the numbers we are holding steady. We're kind of not good, but we're kind of have one hand on the problem, and we hope we're holding our breath, hoping that we can make it a little bit better, or at least hold it like this until the vaccine comes. Is that also, because when I listen to Tom, it feels like, oh my God, this is absolutely not handled. Like, it's still going crazy. Alessandro, is that like, do you have a handle on it? Do you feel in Italy more or less, or not at all?
More or less, I could see that just because from looking at data, we see that the new cases every day are going down steadily. The way we handle this second wave is that probably with a little bit of a late response, but the government decide to divide the regions in three categories. So you had a yellow category, an orange category, and a red category based on a big amount of factors. So how many ICUs were free at the time, how many daily cases you're getting, how many patients are on quarantine in percentage to how many people are actually going to the hospital. And so looking at those, at that data, the government would push a region to a higher level, from say from a yellow to an orange to a red level, and progressively each region would have stricter rules to follow, and so that is kind of a dynamic solution to the problem.
Yeah, that's how it works in I feel in all of Europe, at least in France and Finland. Certainly, there are these kinds of numbers, and
we have a similar thing in California too.
Yeah,
and it kind of feels. I mean, it's much more better than probably saying, at least for people who need to. The first lockdown was really rough because everyone had the same rules and had to follow the same rules. In this second lockdown, people could live more if you know what I mean. And of course, you're putting the life of people still in danger, but at least there is not that sense of, oh my God, we can't leave our home because there's this big bad monster outside. Not that there isn't, but it certainly feels more relaxed, if that's something you could say. I think we have a grasp on things, but at the same time, the numbers show that it probably could have been handled better. But since you're not living in a simulation, you're living in a reality, you have to try to balance things out. You will never have you will never be able to make the best decisions every single time. So
yeah, that's something that I think a lot of people don't agree on. I mean, a lot of people, if you listen to the people, I don't know, in the streets on Twitter, everyone's complaining about, like, oh, why didn't they do this? Of course, they should have done that. And like completely, and I understand why, but it's interesting that the sentiment is also always like, if they were in charge of the country, they would have done such a better job at every decision. It's like armchair governing. I don't know.
Yes, absolutely.
I wonder, Paula, how do you feel? What do you think when we're talking about all of this? You know, the situation, how we're handling it, like, how does it feel to you seen from, you know, the almost the other side of the world?
Yeah, it's very fascinating because, you know, when I was listening to Alessandro speak, I was even kind of thinking, I'm like, what wave are we on? You know, like, I don't even know if the first wave has fully hit, because the virus arrived in Africa and then it's moved. We're confused about what template we are following. Let's just to use that word. Like, is it? Have we peaked? Have we not peaked? Of course, our cases are rising. We're not getting better. We're not getting a better handle of it. And there's a sense of we're never going to get a handle of it anytime soon. So it's likely to keep increasing. But we've just accepted that is life here, and so. And so it's fascinating. So I'm like, I think what wave are we on? And when I'm hearing, like, you know, we have different codes, I'm like, oh, that would be nice. I don't know. Like, it's just the ways in which, you know, it's when I open, say, different newspapers from around the world, and, you know, top story is usually COVID. Now that the American election is done, it's usually COVID. But in Kenya, it's not always necessarily COVID related. And I just think I think there's just a sense of this is our new normal and we have COVID and you could get it. And if you do, hopefully you survive, because we might not have the facilities in place to take care of you if you do get it. Especially if you're not from sort of the wealthier sort of aspects of society, what does that mean? But I think in general, a lot of people have been confused about the virus in Africa and how it's moved and why. So, you know, there haven't been all these huge cases, but I actually think it's because we're very much behind I think we're still early on in the first wave, to be quite honest. It's just the curve is a little slower on our side.
So it feels like our concerns are like, and I'm sorry if I'm, you know, not representing your what you're saying well, but it feels like, oh, well, that's nice that they have their things, but like it doesn't really concern us because we're not on that, like...
No, it's interesting. It just depends. You know, there's sometimes, for example, there was this big story about how I think it was Warner, a big movie studio in the US had decided that they were going to stream all of their movies for 2021.
Yeah,
I don't know, Tom, you might. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. You got it.
Right. But we're still going to movie theaters here.
Oh, really? Know?
Yeah, we still have, you know, it's of course this distancing, but going to the movies, they're still open. You know, there you can still go watch a movie here. And so that's what I mean in terms of this. Sometimes there's a disconnect with what's happening on your side of the world and then what's happening with mine. Because then if I had a movie theater, I would wonder, well, do I get to distribute movies next year? How does this new big news in movies affect us here and so forth? It's strange because I'm trying to see what are the ways in which things are in common with what you're all going through. And even some of them, I'm saying we have had 1,568 deaths, which is big for us, but compared to some of the numbers.
We're very much past that. It's like, oh, was Tuesday, you know, I'm exaggerating. But
Not even. I think it's about 3,000 deaths. A day now in the U.S. So how do you speak about crisis in my own country? What is considered a crisis when, in comparison to everyone else, whose crises seem so much more bigger and more like really life threatening?
So it doesn't feel life-threatening for you?
It doesn't. I have family in the U.S. and I know my mother wanted to fly to the U.S. around Thanksgiving. And we were like, why? Like, just stay. It's safe here. You know, why would you want to go? It's safe here. We have a lot of European expats who left just as COVID before all the lockdowns were happening around the world. And then as soon as airports opened, came back because they want to wait it out this side of the world. So
I just want to add, certainly that sentiment that it's safer here compared to the US is echoed, I think, in Europe. We're like, okay, we're not doing great, but at least we're not them.
I can.
Right. But is it also a fair comparison? Because if you don't mind my saying, that was just a failure of governance in many ways. And so is it fair to compare it to the U.S.? Who is then our standard? Because everyone looks compared to the U.S., but then who is the standard now?
I'm not saying we look great. Certainly we don't feel like we're handling it great. Maybe in Finland it's doing okay.
And disrespect, Tom. Sorry, I hope it didn't.
No, of course. I don't run the country, so I'm not going to be offended.
I think we have a grasp, a handle on COVID things. Unless anyone else wants to add anything on that topic, I'm going to open the floor. If there's any other topic that made the news that you think is worth mentioning from your country, anything that was a big story recently, what would you, is there something that you would like to mention? Except for the Mandalorian, of course, Tom, which that was certainly a big thing.
Can I say I did not know what that was? I had to Google it. I know. And what does that say about me? To not know. Especially when I saw it was Star Wars related, I was like, oh goodness, then I'm really gonna look bad. But the fact that you had to wake up at 5 a.m. to watch it, and then And then there's a person on the panel who's like, wait, what is that? I'm very sorry.
No, there's no need to apologize at all. It's a big world with too much to watch out there.
But yeah, I'm curious, though.
We don't get Disney Plus here.
That's either. It, right? And when you were mentioning, and Patrick, if I may, the big story that's non-COVID in Los Angeles is the movie studios versus the theaters, because that's our local industry. That's our biggest industry here. And that decision where Warner is going to put all of its movies onto streaming in the United States for the coming year is a huge deal here. But that doesn't apply to Kenya or the rest of the world, because the streaming service that Warner operates, HBO Max, doesn't operate the rest of the world. So the rest of the world's going to get those movies in theaters instead of on the streaming service.
The North, or yeah, exactly. In the North, we have HBO Go, which might get it before Netflix does, but who knows? There are also issues of, in France at least, you can't put a movie in the theaters if it's out on the there's basically a period of time you have to wait between the theater release and all the other releases, and for subscription services, it's like 2 years. It's ridiculously long. And if you put it out on the streaming service first, and then in the movie theater, you have to take it out of the streaming service. Although they said it's only going to be streaming for a month, so maybe they can do that. Put it on the streaming service for a month, then in the theaters, and then you wait another 2 years.
But they're not going to. That's the announcement, is they are only putting it on what's called HBO Max, which is not the same as HBO. It's very confusing.
Yeah, yeah.
In the United States, the rest of the world, they're going to release those movies into theaters. At least that's what they've said so far. They may change their mind, but yeah.
Damn it. Okay. So that was a big story, I suppose. But I want to ask, Paula, do you not know what The Mandalorian is? Or do you think people in Kenya don't really know what it is because there's no...
I think it's me. I don't want to represent my country badly. I think I'm really confused about how I missed this. You know, it's one of those things like, how did I... This is huge. Right. How do I have no idea what they're talking about?
So you think people in Kenya... Right. People in Kenya probably know.
It's about how people are consuming media here during COVID, I think. So, if it's a big movie release, and if I get this correctly, this is a TV series that's specifically on Disney Plus.
Exactly.
If it's a show that's on streaming, that's a little tough to... And then it's streaming that's not Netflix, really, because that's at the end of the day what we get. It things can, you know, we hear about it maybe, but they can sort of get lost in the fray. I think in terms of consumption, what's picked up on our side of the world during COVID is Korean dramas and Korean sort of television has really become popular here. Mostly through Netflix at the end of the day. But that seems to be what's getting a lot of attention here.
That's funny because I think they picked up everywhere.
I've watched a lot of Korean drama myself. I don't think I'm representative of a whole lot of other people here, but there's some good stuff coming out of Korea right now.
Yeah. I think there's, Netflix kind of started with some Japanese drama, but then they got a lot of, local Korean stuff that they could buy relatively cheap, I'm guessing, because they've never really been exported. So they bought all of them and they took the world by storm. I kind of, on principle, since Japan and Korea have been enemies for so long, I'm like, I don't want to watch the Korean stuff. I want to watch the Japanese stuff. Also, I don't have time to watch anything, but, you know, that's one of my...
We are attracted to a specific, so like I guess Korean dramas make sense. Filipino TV shows, Mexican and Brazilian telenovelas, those do very well here on TV, and Turkish dramas as well do well here.
That's such an interesting association, like Korean and telenovelas and Turkish. That's
anything to do with family, corruption, drama in that way feeds well here.
Interesting. All right, Alessandro, is there anything other than COVID on the radar for, you know, big news topics from Italy, or is it really just vaccines and COVID?
I mean, it's mostly COVID at this point, but once the the second wave is starting to get into this kind of second half of the this situation. It's mostly everything is just mostly going back to politics talk. I feel, and how everyone is just trying to instrumentalize everything, like you do, you know, like you do. every side of politics is just trying to instrumentalize every single piece of news that comes to the television, to whatever. And I think that one of the biggest talking points right now is that. It's still COVID, unfortunately. I'm sorry, I don't have many more.
Oh, that's things fine. To talk about, but
there have been new rules put in place for Christmas and for New Year's, so that all kind of meetings are going to be outlawed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be really interesting because you will not be able to travel far from where you actually reside, and it's going to break a lot of families. It's going to
for Christmas. You mean they won't be
for
able
Christmas,
to,
yeah. Which is absolutely incredible. It's probably on the level of Thanksgiving in the U.S. since that was a big news coming through the internet like a couple of weeks ago.
Mm.
And yeah, so everyone is talking about all the restrictions that are going to be put in place, how these restrictions make sense but don't make sense in a couple situations, because it's really different that you can travel out of your, say, your county if you live in a big city rather than if you live in a small city. Yeah, it's mostly that, and just politics from the left wing, the right wing, the more moderate people, just everyone is trying to make a story out of it, trying to get the actual government to tremble in fear and
yeah,
and see if they can take some percentage votes to, under their wing.
Mm. Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously it's kind of the same in France. Everything is about COVID, and we have weekly like addresses by the prime minister, and sometimes every month or so by the president, telling us where we stand and what they hope is going to happen in the next few weeks, and when things don't go as well as they had hoped, the new kind of restrictions that are in place and all of that. But I think there's one thing I didn't mention in the last episode. It happened after, I believe, which was a pretty horrendous, and I'm talking about France again, not Finland, but a pretty horrendous case of police violence, which was caught on tape of three police officers who grabbed a black music, of course, you know, it's someone from a minority, a black music producer who was entering his office, and for reasons, maybe the reasons have been made more clear now, but they were very unclear even days after it had happened. They pushed him inside his studio, which is just an office, and started, excuse my French, beating the shit out of him. And essentially, it's the kind of thing you hear about in the US, and you've seen a little bit more in France. I don't think it's ever, or it's rarely as bad as it is in the US for mostly weapons reasons. They usually don't have guns, so it's beating up rather than shooting. But this one was especially egregious because he was arrested and all of that. And thankfully, they had a camera inside the studio, which happened to be pointed at the entrance and the place where they were beating him up. And a journalist reported on the story, published the video footage, and with an interview of the guy who was saying, you know, and I don't want this to be understood in a way that it shouldn't be, but he's not like the kind of, or he doesn't sound like the kind of, I don't know, like ghetto suburbs minority that you think the cops would beat on because they check him out and see if they have like some drugs on them or whatever, like the kind of ridiculous cliche you would imagine. He is a it seems like he's relatively wealthy, middle class, and maybe that's part of the reason why it touched people even more. It shouldn't, but I think it might have played a role. But the bottom line is he was saying, you know, thank God for that footage, because otherwise my family, I can't remember what they accused him on ultimately, but he was saying my family, I would be in prison. My family would not really know if I had done something bad or if I was actually guilty of the things they accuse me of. Obviously people would not have cared about this whole story. I would just be probably in prison, probably I don't know where. And it was a huge scandal. And it's not the first police brutality scandal in France. But so far, the government had been kind of holding the line of, you know, the police has a tough job. And of course, we must prosecute the issues when they happen. But you can't consider it a systemic problem. But now it's reached the level of, okay, enough with the excuses. There is a problem and we need to do something about it. Now, whether or not this is perceived as sincere and whether or not it will produce something is still uncertain. But it was definitely, aside from COVID, I would say the biggest story in the past month. I suspect it didn't get out of the borders of France. It's not big enough that you would have heard about it, I think. But
I heard that they have revised the law on recording video of police for hostile purposes because of that, right?
No, so that's actually a different thing. And that story, so the thing you're referring to, Tom, is a different bill that was passed to prevent people from not recording, but broadcasting images of police officers unblurred, with the explanation that people shouldn't use this video footage and this kind of video footage to kind of dox or harass police officers, which I think on paper is, I mean, sure, why not? You know, you don't want people to point fingers at police officers who are doing their jobs and harass them or get their faces out there. But first of all, there are laws that already prohibit this kind of behavior. And second of all, it was never really a problem. Like it wasn't a thing that people would do it. Maybe it's good to prevent future issues potentially, but it was never really a problem. And the third thing I think is that there are issues with police officers not wearing their ID badges, which with the numbers that allows them to be identified. And there have been, as people know, I'm sure, with the yellow jackets, a lot of protests in France. And that issue has been coming over and over again, along with police brutality. So police brutality has been in the conversation for a couple of years. And that law that you can't, again, you can record them, and there are provisions in the law that says the press can do their job, they can film, but it's still like, okay, so what's the point of the law, kind of? So it's actually a different thing. And that law was kind of already voted on, but when that scandal happened, a few Congress people, I don't know if that's the term in France, but representatives who had voted for it, who are in the party of the majority, went back and said, oh, but now we need to change the law after having voted for it like the week before. It was very close that these things happened. So now it's in the Senate, and the Senate is a majority right, which might want that law and maybe something harsher. The whole thing happened at the same time.
I'd actually heard about this case, not through the news, but through like a WhatsApp group that I'm
in. Interesting.
And in which it has sort of like Black women from around the world, I guess I would best describe this group. And it came up, and the discussion that came up in the group was a sense of, oh, yes, this police brutality, but it's not as bad as America. feeling, which I think people always use as a standard. And then there was an argument among sort of the Black Europeans that it's such an unfair comparison because it's just different kind of. I think the American version, first of all, because of America just being a place where we all consume news from there to begin with. And then that particular Black population is very vocal and seen and covered in their media. I think that's a little bit different because I think earlier in the summer there was a case in Portugal with an actor who was might have been murdered through police brutality. I'm not sure if it was that, but there was that. That's this general argument of just because it's not America doesn't mean it's not as bad. And what was funny is that there was a woman in the group who is Canadian, and her thought, what she said is, in a lot of Canada, which tends to be compared to the US a lot, there's a sense of, oh yeah, we don't have this problem as compared to our friends in the south of us. But I think it's generally each country's police brutality is unique, even within Kenya, because most people think of police brutality as sort of race and color specific. But in how it shows up in Kenya is socioeconomic, and it's brutal and it's violent. It happens a lot in the slums sort of the lower socioeconomic parts of the city, where there are deaths that happen very, very frequently. So I think it's just very fascinating to see how it plays out in society, I guess, when these things happen.
Mm-hmm. Paula, if I may, I'm curious if that group was discussing the special anti-robbery squad, the SARS squad in Nigeria as well.
Yes, very much so. And that was a huge thing, mostly because of the protests around it. And I'm not sure if everyone is familiar, but there was a police brutality sort of protest that happened in Nigeria it's still ongoing, but it's died down. And it was about police brutality in Nigeria. And it was close to in the world's mind, close to what happened in the US in terms of timelines. And so the question of just police brutality in general, what the police get to do when they're in charge, especially if they have weapons, especially if they have, I don't know, whatever forms of equipment to keep people in, I guess, people quiet, is key. So yes, that was also a really big discussion. Mm. And what was special about that discussion is race was taken out of the conversation when it comes to talking about police brutality within Africa, because the dynamics around that are quite different.
Mm. I just want to mention that that sentiment, and I speak as someone who is not the victim of obviously racism or police brutality, but the sentiment that you mentioned, that at least we're not the US, I guess, again, I'm sorry for all the US listeners. There are a lot of them, you know, I think the majority of listeners, but again, just like COVID, for police brutality, my sentiment, and not to diminish the realities of police brutality elsewhere, the sentiment is, at least you don't get shot, right? At least you don't die. And that doesn't mean, you know, that poor guy who would have ended up in prison probably for a very long time, it doesn't, you know, it's not great either. I'm not trying to say that. But the feeling of, well, at least it's not the US, is echoed a little bit here as well, at least for me.
Yeah, and death is the extreme. What leads to the death is the harassment, there's different levels of that violence that one leads to. And I think that's the difference, I think, sometimes with some countries, is that you can be harassed consistently and all the time. And just because you don't end up dead doesn't mean the violation or the subjugation and is less, as in, I'm not taking away what it means to die at the hands of the police. But because that's so extreme, a lot of the time people excuse what happens in between getting to that point.
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, I'm not, you know, if you don't reach level 10 of horror, it doesn't mean that level 9 is not horrible. And it's still, you know, obviously. Yeah, or I don't know, maybe someone who's actually been the victim would tell me, you know what, it's all level 10. Like, it's not one is less worse than the other. It's possible.
Yeah, and if I may say, I think it's a good thing that it is getting exposed and talked about, even if that makes it look like, oh, I'm glad I'm not in the U.S., because that will help us solve the problem. What you don't see are talks about extrajudicial killings or, you know, internment of Uyghurs talked about in the same way, because they sort of feel like, well, that just happens. That happens in those countries. And I think, you know, what I would say from the U.S. point of view is hopefully all of this attention will help us improve on that problem.
And there's a lot of improvement to be had all around, I guess. All right, I guess that's a pretty good roundup of a number of things that have been happening. Does anyone have anything else, or are we ending? I don't think I'm going to be making another episode in 2020. We're going to end on a high note. But anyone has
I'd
another
love to
story?
Know how everyone is spending their Christmas, how they usually spend Christmas, and then how it's going to be different this year. I'd love to hear from you guys on that.
Tom, you can go first if you want.
Okay. We actually have the last few years spent it in different ways. Last year, we spent it in Japan. We will definitely not be doing it that way this year. So, I think we're gonna have some. We've ordered some food to make, and it's just gonna be my wife and I and our two dogs. We'll probably do some texts and phone calls and video calls to, you know, see our nieces and nephews and sisters and brothers and whatnot. But yeah, it's gonna be pretty quiet, just staying at home.
Alessandro, what about yourself?
We usually spend the Christmas with family. We usually travel to see my grandma, my uncle, my aunt that I don't usually get to see very often. But again, for all the new measures that are going to be happening on Christmas, I'm going to spend all with my small familiar nucleus, with my dad, my mother, and my sister. So it's going to be the same Christmas with family, but on a much, much smaller scale.
What about you, Paula? I'll go after.
Okay. So my family is very spread around the world, and Christmas is the one time of the year that we're all together. So we're really feeling it that we would be around each other. But I'll luckily get to be around my parents, which I'm feeling very blessed about this year. And I think we're going to watch The Crown, because Princess Diana was, for African women, I don't know how to describe how much she was loved here. My mother used to buy foreign copies of Hello magazine every week to read about whatever Princess Diana was doing. And so, and you know, we are part of the Commonwealth and we were colonized by the British. So there's very much a fascination with the royal family. And so I think we're all going to tune into Netflix wherever we are in the world and watch that season specifically for my mother, just so she can relive her glory days being a Diana fanatic early on in her life.
That's really interesting. Just so you know, it's a little bit depressing. We've been watching it, and it's really well done. But it's funny because my wife grew up in a family that has a lot of affection for the or interest in royal families around the world, which I don't know if it's a French thing, but we do not. Obviously, we dealt with our royals a while ago and have not looked back since. But so I don't really even know what the royal families do or what they are. But she has a very strong opinion that being a royal sucks. Like, it is horrible. It's a terrible life, a terrible job. And they certainly showcase how horrible it is in that season. And I'm not going to say much more because I don't want to ruin it for you. But it's not feel good, let's say, even less so than the previous ones. And yeah, I learned a lot of things about the royal families. Yeah. And yeah.
Well, yeah, the good thing is it's true, quote unquote, true, factual. I guess.
Well, there was a whole.
The Brits are quite angry about that, but.
Yeah. There was a whole dispute there where they're trying to get Netflix to put a warning saying this is a work of fiction in front of it.
That oh, really? Funny. Is that because the first couple of seasons I thought were pretty well received? Is it for the fourth or?
Because of the Diana stuff, yeah. Right. Okay. Specifically.
I think there was a fear that Charles, who is supposed to be the next king, comes off very, you've watched it, comes off very badly. Mm-hmm. So, and this is the first season where a lot of people watching remember, you know, this period in time. So there's a lot of fracas around how Netflix making sure that they let their audience know that a part of this is fiction, because the fear was that a lot of people would assume it's documentary style. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let me tell you, Charles does not come off great in that show. And I mean, if he would just stand straight for once in one scene, you'll see it. You'll see what I mean. It is like the of all the issues that I will not talk about and won't spoil, the one that sticks out the most to me, just stand up straight. For God's, for Queen's sake, stand up straight. He's always slouched, and I don't know if that's the case, but he looks better than the real one, though. Yeah.
Okay. Posture matters. Posture matters in our
absolutely.
Roles, let's just say
that. Absolutely.
What about you and your Christmas, Patrick? What are you going to do?
Yeah, so this is it's going to be a weird one on a kind of like you, Paula, and like a lot of people around the world. It's because we... in the past few years, when we've lived in Finland, we would take the opportunity of the holiday, the vacation from our son, to go to France and to spend a couple of weeks in Paris, to spend time with my mother and my family, of course, and have an opportunity for my son to speak a little bit of French or a little bit more. And obviously, that is not going to happen. So... it's not like it's not the end of the world. We're not broken up about it. We're not, you know, it's just a little bit sad, a little bit unfortunate, but in the sense that we would have liked to do it, but we think we'll be able to do it next year, hopefully, maybe. And so it sucks, but it's not like something I would, you know, it's not like I feel like... people should feel bad about it for me. There are things that, you know, maybe even for me, I wouldn't be shy about saying, oh, that sucks. People should feel bad. This isn't even on that level, but it does affect us. Certainly it does affect how we're going to do things. We'll probably have the Finnish family over. So we'll still have family, and it's not so bad in Finland that you can't do that. But even if we include the Finnish family, total will be like, I don't know, 5 or 6 people, right? We're not going to have a big gathering. So, yeah. Yeah, that's going to be Christmas. It's going to be a weird one, certainly. But in France, the problem is people expect many people in the population to not follow the rules and just have Christmas, which, again, is not a good idea. But... yeah, so there you go. That is the last episode of the Phileas Club for 2020, a memorable year in many ways. And again, it's not over, so let's hope things don't take a turn for the even worse. Yeah, you wanted to add something?
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed for sure. But yeah, that's going to be it for the show. Of course, as usual, I'm going to give each one of you an opportunity to tell us where we can find you on the internet if listeners want to have more of your opinions and views. Tom, you get first go.
Yeah, I do several podcasts, many of them with Patrick. You can find them all at tommerritt.com. That's with two R's, two T's in Merritt. They are about technology, science fiction and fantasy books, Star Wars, etc. And Patrick and I do one called Work Insanity, where we talk about the challenges and triumphs of working from home. So again, you can find all those at tommerritt.com.
Thank you, Tom. Paula, what about you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Kalibawse, which is at KalibaWse. And then any of the work that I'm doing around Africa and podcasting, which is my particular specialty with Africa Podfest. And yeah, that's what I'm doing for the rest of the year. So you can find me there.
Excellent. The link to your Twitter account will be included in the show notes, of course. Alessandro, you didn't have a Twitter account last time, I believe. Has that changed, or do you have something else you want to refer people to?
I now have a Twitter account, and woo-hoo! I never tweet.
Okay. So,
but if you want to witness the rare tweet that comes out once a year, maybe... you will be able to follow me on Twitter at LSSNDR0.
Wait.
It could be down in the description, I guess.
Yes, LSSNDR0. So it's Lissandro, but without the vowels.
Without the vowels.
Excellent. All right.
Yeah.
Perfect. I will include it in the show notes. Yeah. No, you can say more. Say anything you want. Now's your time.
No. I really don't have anything else to say except for thank you.
Well,
thank you for having me here.
Thank to all three of you. For me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can find my gaming show if you want to hear about something that had a really good year in 2020. That's people staying home and playing video games. And we really had a great year. You can find that at frenchspin.com. The name of the show is Pixels. And of course, if you want to support the show, you can do that at patreon.com/thephileasclub. The link is in the show notes as well. That is the way that the show is produced and financed. So if you get something out of the show, if you appreciate it, if we kind of help you along understanding a little part of the world and how things go and entertain you in the process, then maybe consider throwing a couple of bucks our way. The link is in the show notes. It's patreon.com/thephileasclub. Tom, Alessandro, Paula, thank you so much for helping me have a fun last episode of the year. And I will talk to all of you in 2021. Bye.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.